Morning.
Good morning. Is it raining in Newcastle?
Well, I'm actually at Port Macquarie, but not in Newcastle, but it's looking pretty grey, yes.
Is it? Oh, dear. So it's all up and down the coast. There we go. That's our weather report for today. thanks for our reporter from Port Macquarie. Wayne, look, this military suspension that came after some inappropriate material was found being taught at a Perth course, which an Indonesian officer was at. What are these materials that were found?
Well, I'm not in a position to tell you anything about that.
No, dear.
All I know is that the Special Forces of Indonesia and Australia training together, and apparently material was found there, and there have been various reports of what it was, particularly linking it to West Papua, which has been a major problem. So, yes, you've had those reports, but the question I've got is, why does an incident like that trigger a level of disputation at the level where you've got a general saying that, okay, military collaboration is off? That doesn't make sense at all to me, whatever, and particularly given that the SAS and Capacis, obviously top secret operations and what have you. How does a minor incident like this trigger such a major diplomatic rift?
Yeah, I mean, is there a bit of resentment to Australia in the upper echelons of the military of Indonesia?
Oh, well, that's no secret. I think that's been a problem for a long time. And I think, as a number of commentators have said, the invasion, as they said, of Timor in 1999 has a major effect. And it's not only this general. There are quite a number of significant top brass in Indonesia, some of whom are now in cabinet, who remember very clearly what happened in 1999, have never reconciled themselves to Australia's role in what happened then. So it doesn't surprise me that the Indonesians have been watching Australian behaviour since. And it's interesting that they commented on the Australian white papers, defence white papers, including the 2016 white paper, where we've made it very clear that we've now got a capability, a maritime capability, with these giant LHD ships, they're called, two of them, that can project power into the region. Well, the Indonesians are saying, well, why do you need this capability? Where's that heaven?
What's an LHD ship? Is that left-hand drive or what?
No, they're loading sort of docking vessels. They look like aircraft carriers. They're bigger than the old aircraft carriers.
Oh, was one in a Darling... Would one be in a Darling Harbour just recently? I mean,
yes,
sorry.
That's right. There are two of them.
Yeah.
And
they're huge.
They can carry a battalion of troops, 1,000 troops, you know, carry tanks and transports. But the bottom line is, with these LHD ships, these huge transport ships, which have also got a capacity to fly planes off them, they've got ski ramps.
Ah.
But we've now got the air warfare destroyers too, which are three of those. So we've now got a task force capability, and I think a number in Indonesia have been watching this, plus our joint strike fighter, and saying, you've got a strong regional capability, and a lot of the planning for this sort of task force capability came out of the 1999 Timor operation, when people at the time said, we're not really geared up for this sort of intervention. Well, I think the Indonesian military have been watching that pretty carefully, saying, well, you're now geared up. Where's this all headed? And if you add to that some pretty high-profile issues on our intelligence relationship with the United States and trying to hack into the president's phone and all this sort of stuff. So it's really our relationship with the United States, which we claim put us in a different league to Asia. And I think the Indonesians, along with some Australian commentators, are saying, well, are you in a different league to Asia? Are you now seeing yourself as superior in the region? And when you look at the defence budgets, well, we spend more on defence than pretty well everybody in Southeast Asia combined. So, yes, I think the Indonesians still have a concern about the relationship.
Are they a bit more concerned if we're seen as being a bit of a proxy for the emboldened Trump administration?
Well, I think that's a very real possibility.
Yeah. So
because Trump has certainly made it pretty clear that he expects more of his allies. Mind you, we've got a $50 billion trade deficit with the United States, so I think there's a question mark as to whether or not Trump's got his figures right here. But the fact that we spend a lot now on defence, and it's going up to 2% of our budget, so we're going to be one of the world's leading top spenders on defence. But then again, there are capability issues, but compared to our neighbours, you know, it's the capability we have there that I think Indonesians are worried about. And Trump, of course, is talking about a massive expansion of defence capability in America and key allies to do more. Well, that's bound to trigger a reaction in the region. See, some countries like Singapore, which we have very close relations with in defence, they're happy enough about this. But Indonesia, to a lesser extent Malaysia, probably have real concerns.
Yeah, well, I was just also thinking, as you were talking there, that if I was Indonesia, I'd really want my soldiers and special forces personnel to be embedded as much as possible in Australia's to know what we were doing, wouldn't we? So well, why break that side of things off?
Well, the special forces, in many ways, it's a bit of a shotgun marriage because after Timor in 1999, the defence relationships were severed. A lot of the special forces cooperation comes down to counter-terrorism. And so the terrorism agenda is a very strong American agenda. We've made it our own, and we've talked up the links between terrorism around the world as part of a global threat. Well, I'm not so sure the Indonesians quite share to the same degree that level of threat. But the problem for them is not so much what we're doing with special forces, and they've had special forces for a long time. It's this other form of more conventional rivalry when it comes to aircraft and ships and this sort of stuff. I think the military, you're talking about generals that have a lot of political clout in Indonesia, and I think the generals are saying, well, OK, it's one thing to collaborate against terrorism, which in Indonesia, it's a problem, but I don't think it assumes anything like the dimensions of a problem that major commanders in the military are seeing in terms of a regional arms race.
Yeah. I was thinking back there that one of the points that was a bit of a bone of contention apparently on going back to this original incident was I think there's 5 points that underpin the Indonesian national identity as voiced by President Sukarno way back in I think 1949 and one of those points was justice between the various ethnic groups. I mean, they do have a problem internally more than externally, don't they? Because they have a number of religious groups.
Right. Yeah, that's absolutely right. And central to those 5 principles is the idea of one nation.
Yeah.
And the Indonesians under Sukarno have always asserted their right to have one nation for the entire archipelago. That is why they've never accepted that the British territories in North Borneo, for example, in Kalimantan, should join Malaysia, and there was a confrontation about that. They had similar reservations over West Papua, and they've been very, very sensitive about what's going on in New Guinea, which has apparently played into the current disputes with respect to the training of our special forces. But clearly, they've been very, very sensitive about West Papua, and you can see that in the way the Australians have been carefully tiptoeing around the question of protecting our borders against refugees. Well, what about the status of refugees from West Papua? Are they political refugees?
Yeah, and the actual vote that initially gave West Papua to Indonesia really wasn't representative of what a lot of West Papuans wanted.
Well, that's right. There were roughly 1,000 delegates took part in that vote. And when you think about the process, because the Americans had not met with Australia through ANZUS because they were pretty clear in the early 1960s they did not want us to be pressing this to the point where Indonesia, particularly with the Vietnam War going on at the time, Indonesia could not be tipped towards communism. So the Americans were essentially saying, well, you're going to have to compromise on this. And finally, Garfield Barwick, who was then foreign minister, came into cabinet and said, look, we're going to have to give up on this. I know it's a major priority to defend our interests in West New Guinea, but this is not going to happen. So there was really a transfer at that point. It took a number of years to put into place. But about 1,000 chosen delegates from West New Guinea were responsible for that act of transfer. So a lot of people in West Papua, including the OPM, the resistance movement, feel that they never had the chance, as you saw in Timor, never had the chance to really to exercise a genuine vote.
Yeah. Yeah, so it's a very difficult situation.
It is a very difficult situation, and the transmigration of people from particularly from Java to West Papua and sort of dominating many aspects of that has not made that easier. And, of course, it plays to water problems with Papua New Guinea, with whom we have very strong defence relations and very strong defence relations with Timor. And now we have two islands with borders with Indonesia, and, of course, those borders are problems.
Mm.
And in both cases, you've got the Indonesians not really that happy with arrangements that are in place now.
And what do you think about the government's response, the investigation into the matter by Defence Minister Maurice Payne and so forth? Do you think that'll smooth the troubled waters?
Well, I think they're trying to narrow things down. You know, they're not really saying too much about it. And I think if they can have this whole thing coming down to where you started this interview, to a discussion about training materials at a base, if they can sort it out at that level, well, that's probably the best they can hope for politically. But as a number of commentators have been saying, you know, how did this happen? You know, this is a really big deal. And trying to manage this very difficult relationship has really once again received unwelcome public attention. And I think that's the bigger issue here. And it's not going to go away with Trump defence expenditure issues in Asia. And if things unravel with China and South China Sea and a whole range of things like that, then regional tension is going to be a problem.
Hmm.
So you're really seeing a very, very minor situation that's not going to go anywhere. And it's a reminder of what happened in 1999, just how serious that situation was, and the year before with Suharto losing power, the financial crisis in Indonesia, how fragile that was. And finally, your point about the ethnic diversity in the archipelago of Indonesia. Holding that together in a world where states like Yugoslavia have fallen apart, the Soviet Union, the Indonesians are very conscious of the danger they face, and they're very sensitive to it.
Mm. Yeah, and it's quite difficult too, because they're all many islands form part of the nation. So
from
a practical
right.
point of view,
Indonesia
it's hard.
Indonesia has always sought independence. So there's been a long tradition from the very beginning in the 1940s, and Indonesians know the history well, that they did not want to be part of the United States of Indonesia as they saw it. They wanted their own Molucca independence movement, and it's played up from time to time, and they'd be very conscious of that.
Yeah. All right. Look, well, I really appreciate your input there. That's been in very interesting background you've given us, and where we go from here as well. So thank you very much, Wayne Reynolds, for being with us here on The Daily.